Welcome back to this weekly meeting of the Health and Safety Committee with Denver City Council. Coverage of the Health and Safety Committee starts now.
Good morning. Today is August 27th. My name is Daryl Watson. I'm honored to serve as the chair of the Health and Safety Committee. We have an action-packed agenda stored for us, but before we jump into our first action item, and then we have seven consent items, I'll turn it over to city council members to introduce themselves. I believe we have two council members that are online. We'll start first with Councilmember Flynn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kevin Flynn, representing Southwest Denver's District 2.
And producer, is Council President Pro Tem Romero Campbell, joining us yet? I don't think so. So why don't we start to my right? Councilmember Gonzalez Gutierrez.
That's me. Sorry. I thought it was Councilwoman Verdi because she like perked up. Hi, everybody. Serena Gonzalez Gutierrez. Be back.
The ghosts
okay.
are here.
Hi, everybody. Serena Gonzalez Gutierrez. I'm one of your council members at large.
Good morning, Amanda Sawyer, District 5.
Good morning, Chris Hines, Denver's Perfect 10.
Good morning, Amanda Sandoval, Northwest Denver, District 1.
And Sarah Verdi, your other council member at large.
All right, one last check for Council President Pro Tem, seeing that she's not there. We will jump into the first action item. Our colleague, Councilmember Hines, has an ordinance that he wants to share with us. Councilmember Hines, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Committee Chair. Council members, thank you for giving us the opportunity to present in Budget and Policy a few weeks ago, and for the opportunity for you to consider the case for prohibiting the sale of puppies, kittens, and bunnies bred from mills from Denver Pet Stores. So if we could get the slides up on... thank you. Great. So let's just start with a problem statement. Why do we need to ban mill-bred puppies, kittens, and rabbits? First, the methods that are used for breeding are inherently cruel. You see some of the animals in cages here. There are animals that are just in horrible conditions that's all they are meant to do is produce offspring that look cute, that can go for sometimes thousands of dollars. So sometimes the offspring, the puppies, rabbits, and kittens are bred so often that they have just future medical expenses, sometimes months, sometimes years in advance. And there's also a predatory scheme to finance these animals. Some of these breeds go for thousands of dollars, which we'll see here in a minute. When there are environments that are just meant to produce offspring for sale, a lot of times those are in environments that are not meant to protect the public health, and so there might be diseases that transmit from animals to humans. We also have, so I mentioned the health and genetic issues that might not be apparent for months or years. Part of the challenge here, the problem statement is that people will finance these adorable, you know, best friends, and sometimes those could be for thousands of dollars, and then someone's on the hook. And then unfortunately, there's medical expenses that this, you know, the family's also on the hook for. And then the that cute best friend passes away very early in their life, and the owners are still on the hook for those thousands of dollars that are required to purchase the animal. So sometimes these medical conditions are very expensive, and so then the family chooses to surrender that animal, the pet, to a shelter, including a Denver Animal Shelter, which could be an extra burden on shelter resources, which equates to taxpayer responsibility as well. So why should we step in? I mean, after all, there's the USDA that provides regulation. Well, They do and they don't. 45% of the USDA licensed dog dealers in 2024 never had a compliance investigation. 20% of them that did get an investigation uncovered failures, and most of the time there was no corrective action. They said, you didn't pass the test, and that's it. So, some of these violations are for veterinary issues. Sick, injured, or dead animals have never been given medical care or seen by a veterinarian. So it is happening here in Colorado. This is a recent article in the Denver media where they, a puppy mill rescue group, a group that works just on puppy mills, pulled 165 schnauzers from a property in Southwest Colorado. And we saw several dogs with missing limbs or parts of limbs, likely due to the mat strangling and cutting off circulation and then limbs falling off. They were just, the owners didn't care about these living creatures. They cared about profit above anything else. The good news is that we don't have any pet stores that that would be affected by this changing ordinance in Denver today. We've had some other conversations about banning things in the recent past where it would affect stores. It really makes sense for us to do it, to pass an ordinance now before we have to consider the impact on Denver residents who are employees or small business owners. Just for what it's worth, Denver was ranked number 2 in the ranking of U.S. dog-friendly cities. And obviously we see that and we think, oh, well, it makes a whole lot of sense. I've got this yard sign that says, drive like your dog lives here. We are a very pet-friendly city. And obviously pet retailers see that as well. So there's a company called Petland. I apologize. I didn't ask you to introduce yourself. So please introduce yourselves and talk a little bit about Petland.
Roland Topper with Colorado Voters for Animals. And Amy is actually the authority because we don't have, fortunately, a pet land operation yet in Colorado. Hopefully we won't have one. But since Amy deals on a national basis, she has confronted pet land stories in the past. So I'll turn it over to you.
Hi, all. I'm Amy Jesse with Humane World for Animals. Just to a lot of what the council member talked about is relevant for this too, but just to zone in on some specifics. So Petland is a multinational chain. There's about 80 stores selling puppies in the US. They have a terrible history. They get sued all the time. They settle all the time. Just all the things that we've been hearing about is relevant for Petland. To zone in a little bit on this, and a lot of this comes back to the resources that states and cities have to spend when a store like this comes in. And Petland's not unique, to be clear. It doesn't have to be a Petland to have these issues. It really, a lot of puppy selling pet stores would have the same issue. But so in 2022, the Florida Attorney General had a press release saying, we're securing relief for Floridans who purchased sick and dying puppies when they thought they were bringing home a healthy pet. Petland was ordered to pay $200,000 and was banned from misrepresenting a puppy's health, breed, price, or other deceptive contact going forward. Because this was such an issue in Orlando has since passed an ordinance, or actually it was Orange County, but covers Orlando area in Florida. So again, waited till there was a problem, and then they had this whole ordeal on their hands. On the predatory lending, Petland in Naperville, Illinois admitted that 80% of their puppies are financed, and they bragged about that. And that upset city council so much that then Naperville, Illinois passed an ordinance, but it was a huge drawn-out fight because Petland made it as hard as possible on them, claiming you're attacking a small business, and even though Petland's a multinational corporation, but it was much harder to address it once there was a Petland store. Another example, this is maybe one of the most egregious ones, a woman in Houston who's legally blind. Petland signed her up for financing on an iPad, and it ended up having 133% interest rate. Then her puppy died, and she was still on the hook for the financing payments. She called us, and we were able to help her find legal representation down in Houston. And the quote she said to us was, I'm paying $7,000 for ashes. So just horrifying. It's one of the more egregious ones. Houston, Texas has since passed an ordinance like you all are considering today. Again, waiting until these horrifying stories came out of the woodwork. And then just a couple weeks ago, we received a complaint from a consumer in Henderson, Nevada for their Petland store. She said, I bought a puppy. The puppy was really sick. I took the puppy to the vet. The puppy has parvo, which is extremely contagious. She called Petland immediately and said, you sold me a puppy with parvo. Like, you have other puppies that probably have this. And Petland was so indifferent about it. She was so worried. She called us. We were able to get her in touch with animal control there. They investigated. They cited the store a bunch of times. And Henderson is considering an ordinance. I'm a broken record, but right, the point is, like, why wait till these issues come up? And then I'll just say one more thing, which is kind of recent news. Just last week, there was an article in Science magazine that focused more on animal testing, but it's the same number of USDA inspectors. So USDA is the only national oversight of this industry. They're down to 77 inspectors. They're not hiring new inspectors. They're in charge of 17,000 facilities because the same inspectors are charged with the commercial breeders, the animal testing, zoos, anything under the Animal Welfare Act. And so federal oversight is basically non-existent now. And, you know, that's where these puppies are coming from. Pet stores are buying puppies from these huge, mainly Midwest puppy mills that are supposed to be following Animal Welfare Act regulations, which are way too low anyways, but now they're virtually unregulated.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So what can we do? We can take some proactive measures. As I said, there aren't any pet stores right now, so it isn't as if we're going to have that hard conversation of jobs lost or small businesses impacted. That also means that because there are no businesses, that means no lost revenue or sales tax revenue. And we've already heard a bit about Petland. Prohibitions increase, as Amy has shared, as more cities and states learn about the problems that these pet stores create. Eight states and more than 500 cities and townships have passed an ordinance similar to the one we're considering, including here in Colorado. Here are the cities in Colorado that have passed ordinances. For what it's worth, I think Denver is okay with being a leader. We did it with cannabis. We did it again with psilocybin. We're not a trailblazer with this, and that's okay too. We can follow model legislation that has been passed time and time again near us and all over the country. So we obviously would be the biggest city in Colorado to pass this if we were to do so, because we are the biggest city in Colorado, and who knows, maybe this. If we were to consider and pass it, perhaps it would be under consideration at the state soon. It's important to say that it will not do a few things. First, it will not impact or prohibit responsible local breeders who sell directly to the public. It will not prevent pet stores from having adoption events. So if you have that puppy mill rescue organization, like they could theoretically have an adoption event, or Humane Colorado or Humane World, which are two separate organizations, unrelated. Humane Colorado, formerly the Dumb Friends League, Humane World, formerly the Humane Society of the U.S.
Yeah.
Saying SPCA, that's not it.
Good job.
It will, again, what it will not do is close the Denver market to the majority of pet stores that focus on pet products and services. So those names that we all go by here in Denver, they'll still be here in Denver. And that's it. We do have the Denver Department of Public Health and Environment here to answer questions. I know that when it went through budget and policy, there were some procedural questions. I'm happy to take a that's cool. Inception.
I could add to I don't know who wants to go first here.
I think he's just, if members have questions.
If there's additional comments, please share, and then we're going to go to our queue.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that the Denver Animal Shelter is really behind this. Colorado Voters for Animals is a member of MDAWA, which is the Metro Denver Animal Welfare Alliance, and they unanimously support this. And some of these members are not in the city and county of Denver, but they still are affected because if an animal is purchased in Denver, it might be taken out. There's transfers between shelters when there's capacity issues. There are providers that come into Denver, like Spay Today actually comes into the Denver Animal Shelter to provide spay and neuter services. So it's not just, you're not just helping Denver, you're helping surrounding areas as well by doing that as well. So just thought I would mention that.
Thank you so much, Councilmember Hines and experts on this. Lots of information, lots of really sickening stuff as we think of impacts, but really thankful for the elevation. We do have several folks in the queue, and Councilmember Flynn, I want to start with you. I don't want to miss you with you being virtual, so please let me know if you have any comments, and if not, then we're going to go to Councilmember Torres.
If it's okay to go first, thank you.
Yes, please.
Gotten in the queue, but I was just about to get in the queue. Is there a definition of a puppy mill? And I'm wondering, I read the ordinance and it's very brief and succinct, but I'm wondering how does it deal with someone who would have animals to sell and sells them individually from a puppy mill? I know that's a very inefficient way to do it. That's not the way they would want to do it. But how does it address that? Because it basically just says pet stores cannot sell any dogs, cats, or rabbits. And then in the third section, it says they may sponsor adoptions from other humane organizations or shelters and advertise who their sponsorships are. But how does it address those one-offs that might occur, if at all?
Yeah, so I'll start and then hand it over to the experts. Because you're in the sky, I don't know where to look.
All right.
So,
okay, sorry.
We originally.
Oh, feedback.
A first stab or a first draft, one of the early drafts of this ordinance included the ban of sale outside of pet stores, so like on the in parking lots, on the side of the road, or whatever. Turns out that the state has already, in 2025, earlier this legislative session, passed a law banning that statewide. That particular ordinance or bill did not address puppy store sales. So the one-offs in parking lots, that is not in the scope of this version. Because it's already been passed at the state. As far as the one-offs, I'll just give it to you to just talk about the ordinance.
Sure. I also don't know where to look, but hopefully I can be heard. I think the first question was a definition of a puppy mill. There's not really a legal definition of a puppy mill. There was a court case a long time ago that attempted to define it, and it was basically a large-scale commercial breeder that puts profits over the well-being of the animals and is focused on maintaining a low overhead. And so it's cutting corners, basically, to maintain the lowest overhead. That's the closest thing we have to a legal definition. People always say, why don't you just ban puppy mills? Well, of course, that's a complicated thing. But one of the complications is, well, there's a lot of disagreement about what is a puppy mill. My organization considers that size doesn't really come into factor for us. If what some people would call a backyard breeder, we don't really use that term. If the animals are being bred and the puppies are being sold for profit and they're being mistreated, we consider that a puppy mill. Of course, this ordinance doesn't use that terminology. It's not saying pet stores can't buy from puppy mills. It's just the reason that it's a blanket ban is because that's the only place that pet stores can get puppies from. Responsible breeders sell directly to the public. Most of them have in their codes of ethics and their breed clubs, they can't sell to third parties. Selling directly to consumers is a huge part of being a responsible breeder, so it's not an option for pet stores. In terms of the one-offs, I mean, puppy mills basically sell three ways, right? A crucial part of it is they're hiding their conditions from the public. They know they have to hide their conditions from the public. The reason pet stores exist is because after World War II, a lot of farmers were struggling. They didn't know what to do. Someone came up with the USDA said, why don't you try breeding dogs? That could be really popular. So as suburbs were exploding, pet stores started to exist because they thought, oh, these, you know, in Missouri, you can have these dogs in these conditions that no one would be okay with, but then we sell them in a faraway pet shop in the suburbs, and that became lucrative way back then. So not to dive too much into the history of this, but so the big thing is they remain hidden. That's a core part. They have to remain hidden from the public. And so they sell through puppy stores, they sell in these outdoor venues or parking lots, which is what the state has taken care of. And now, you know, in the past decade or so, they've started selling online more, where you literally have a puppy shipped to you. Now, that's tough to deal with on the local level. That's something we're grappling with at the state level and at the federal level. We actually heavily lobbied Congress to at least have online sellers be licensed. And so that is in place now. It's not totally unregulated, at least. That's kind of its own beast. But the puppy mills do prefer pet stores because most people want to see the puppy first. They don't want to just order the puppy online. They want to interact with the puppy. And so it is a really crucial part of this. And that's who will have storefronts in Denver, right? So that's like something that clearly at the local level can be addressed. Why give them storefronts? Make it at least harder for them to sell. So hopefully that answered the question.
You don't know this, but you're giving history to our council historian. So I bet he particularly appreciated.
Well, I'm happy to talk more later if anyone wants to.
Well, and I'll add to the history, I'm talking about the USDA. The reason these cages and things are often so small is when they started encouraging people to raise puppies, they got rid of the chicken, they put them in the chicken coops, got rid of the chickens and put them in the chicken coops, which were very small. And that really hasn't changed over the, you know, the decades.
Mm. Councilmember Flynn, thank you so much. Councilmember Torres.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just looking at the location that this is going into in the code and the relationship between, which I feel like is maybe largely governed by Department of Public Health and Environment, the animal section, but the business license itself is governed by excise and license. So they're not here, just wondering how they're preparing to monitor or implement or kind of who oversees whether or not, because we have existing pet stores that have a pet store license. They don't sell dogs and cats, but maybe they sell reptiles. Who monitors whether or not they begin selling dogs and cats under their existing license?
Yeah, I'm going to leave that to DDPHE. We did have a excise and licenses. DDPHE and I did have a meeting yesterday, the day before, just to make sure that we were on the same page. So,
Mr. Chair, Councilor Torres. So I don't want to speak for Alex Udall, legislative liaison for the Department of Public Health and Environment. I don't want to speak for excise, but if I explain our part, I think that might get to your question. When a pet store applies for an initial license, pet shop is the technical definition, there's a Denver Animal Protection, DAP, does an inspection before they get their license. When they renew their license, there's no inspection for a renewal. And so we expect that there won't be a ton of new stores that are going to come in and start selling puppies, but that an existing store might start selling puppies, kittens, or
rabbits.
And that it would be complaint-based. So if we received a complaint from the public that an existing store were selling a prohibited animal, DAP would go out, do an investigation, and then begin their enforcement process. So notice of violation, citations, escalating from there, with the ultimate backstop being recommending to excise and licenses that they show cause their license.
And so then excise would conduct a show cause hearing?
Yeah, that is our understanding based on the meeting that we had yesterday.
Okay. And then
that would be if, pardon,
sure.
That would be if it reached that level, obviously, sure. With the notice of violation, if they stopped doing it, then it would end there.
Okay. And it's an annual renewal?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Councilor Torres, the pet shop license, I believe, is required to be renewed annually, but it does not require an inspection, and so it's a paper transaction, I believe.
Okay, got it. And the investigation arm is DDPHE, not excises investigators?
Correct. Mr. Chair, Councilor Torres, the Chapter 8 is enforced by Denver Animal Protection.
Okay, got it. Thank you for that. Thank you. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much, Alex, for providing that clarification. We have Councilmember Sawyer and then Councilmember Parody.
Don't go anywhere, Alex. So Councilwoman Torres got my questions about enforcement and how that's going to look, so really appreciate that. Follow-up question for you is just in terms of staffing, right? Given layoffs, given budget challenges, et cetera, does, and I know you can't speak for excise, but does DAP have what you all need in order to successfully enforce this ordinance?
Sure, Mr. Chair, Councilor Sawyer. So I just want, I do want to clarify something that was mentioned earlier. The department doesn't regularly weigh in on whether we support or oppose something, but I can say that we don't have any concerns with the ordinance as written.
Great.
We don't anticipate that this would create a need for an increase in staffing.
Yeah, so regulatory burden is not an issue that brings concern to DDPHE. No. Awesome, thank you, thanks.
Thank you so much. Councilmember Parody?
Yeah, I'm just gonna ask a silly blanket question kind of because I listened to this in budget and policy, listened to it here, sounds really logical to me. I hate those, you know, business models. So my only curiosity, and it's really for everybody, including Alex, is where would you anticipate any kind of like pushback or resistance or, you know, consequences that I wouldn't foresee not having been down the weeds of this? Or like, is there anything out there that we might anticipate, you know, someone showing up to comment and being so angry about this for reasons other than that they own a business that, you know, wants to do this kind of practice, right? Like,
yeah.
So Amy's worked on this for 10 years across the nation, passing it at the state and local level. So she...
Where do you get pushback?
Yeah.
And where do you get any pushback that we might care about, if any?
Sure, yeah, it's a great question. If you do get any opposition, a lot of the talking points will be largely irrelevant because there aren't current pet stores.
Yeah.
So if there were a current, and sometimes like the national groups, one's called like Pet Advocacy Network, they're a trade group basically. When they weigh in, they don't really change their talking points for preventative and non-preventative, so it will be a lot of like, you're shutting down a business, and that's
no, we're not, yeah,
right. So it's a lot of that. A lot of what they like to say is that these ordinances don't do what they're intended to do. They actually just promote a black market. Now, as this ordinance was going to do, it was going to address the two most common chains or supply outlets, which is pet stores and outdoor sales. Okay, so the state's already taking care of the parking lots and all that. So the, also opposition is not going to acknowledge that. They're going to hope you guys don't know that, right? So it would be...
That's actually really glad I asked this.
So it would be like, oh, these unregulated market, like parking lots, right? That's going to be... This came up a lot in Fort Collins, too, because they had a real problem with like some Wyoming breeders would come. And so, okay, so when I met with the mayor, she was like, this is fine, but like, this isn't our biggest problem. And I was like, what is your biggest problem? And she's like, parking lot sales. I'm like, well, there's no reason we can't do both at the same time. So that was before the state passed the bill. But so for, that's why Fort Collins did both at the same time. And Denver was going to do that, but now don't have to because the state did it. So they won't acknowledge that that's kind of been taken care of. And then they'll talk about like online sales as being a black market, which they know better. It's not a black market. It's right since 2013. It's been regulated the same way as people who sell to pet stores. If you sell online, you have to have a B license from the federal government. I'm not saying that regulation is great, but they ignore that fact. So that would be probably their two biggest talking points is like impact on business and then, oh, and pet choice, right? People deserve to buy a pet wherever they want to. That's another big one, but this is not good for people to have this choice. We hear that all the time.
Then, pet choices.
Right. And like shelters are full and there's tons of awesome, like even breed specific rescues in Denver, like tons. And then there are responsible breeders. Yeah. So you know,
we have a shortage of a market.
Yeah, so those would be the top things. Like other pet stores in the area, I suppose, could come in opposition and say this is like a slippery slope and like there's a guy in like Centennial who might say, well, if you do this, then Centennial, you know, things like that. But again, it doesn't directly impact them at all.
Okay, thank you. That was actually super helpful. Now we know what the false flags will be that we
need. And I'm keeping an eye on like PAN's like advocacy page to see if they've caught wind of this. Because like they still have Fort Collins up, so they're a little
bit behind. Came out in Aurora.
Okay. Head advocacy. Okay. Alex, do you have anything to add to that you would be have your flags up for from your point of view as the agency?
Mr. Chair, Councillor Parody, the department would not be involved in the politics of the council's sponsored bill.
That you think you might get complaints. Like, if this passes, you're the regulator. Is there anything you would foresee someone being really angry in your inbox about? I mean, there's no one it's going to immediately apply to, which is actually great and a good reason to get it in place. So, anything?
I would say we just follow our normal enforcement process, and people don't like having enforcement placed on them, but the rules are the law is the law, and so we would follow the law. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, thank you. That was all I wanted to know. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Councilmember Parody, and Alex Bedell. I always like your responses, so you're very considerate in the way you respond. I wanted to see for council members, or if there's anyone else that wanted to jump into the queue as I do one more look. This is an action item, so I would need a motion and a second.
Moved.
Moved by Sawyer, second by Parody. Is there a need for a vote? A thumbs up. Looking forward to seeing you all on the floor. Thank you so much, Councilmember Hines and team, for bringing this forward.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have seven items on consent that have been pulled off, so this meeting is adjourned. Thanks, everyone.
Oh my gosh, I have an hour. Oh, it's a free.